Michael Avery with Classic Business. Oscar Wilde had the perfect explanation of the difference between surprised and shocked. A man found a friend of his in bed with his wife, and he exclaimed, "James, I'm surprised." The philandering friend, a professor of English, replied, "No, Peter, you're shocked. It's I that I'm surprised." And so are we the voting cattle, the Jameses of this joke, surprised by the president's perpetual surprise at the sad state of South Africa and its steady decay, when we should actually be shocked into acting? I think the Peter Bruce theory, as it's now becoming known, see us to the promised land of reform? Or will the popular suburban theory that the ANC is beyond salvaging lead us to our downfall? I think as the election campaign enters the final furlong, we welcome back our political panel to try and answer these questions. First up, we've got political analyst Daniel Silk on the line. Daniel, welcome.
Yes, good to be with you. Good evening, everybody.
And Gareth van Onselen, Head of Politics and Governance at the South African Institute of Race Relations. Thanks for joining us again, Gareth.
Hi there.
And in studio, we've also got Professor Tumo Kele, Associate Professor of Management Services at UNISA. Professor, welcome.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Daniel, perhaps you can kick us off tonight. The Zuma faction is certainly making no secret of the fact that they want to get rid of the president, and probably the sooner the better. They're quite disgruntled still by the narrow margin of victory at Nasrec. If you read Melanie Favut, she reckons that they're claiming the victory was stolen due to the disqualification of 220 odd delegates. I mean, this just shows you how the fight back is now out in the open. The big question is, can they do it? Can they remove Cyril Ramaphosa if he were to get any manner of victory on the 9th of May?
A good question, and I think it does point to the issue of, you know, what constitutes a decent mandate for Ramaphosa. After all, I think we all acknowledge that he needs, from his own perspective, a decent mandate. But my own view is that clearly, if the ANC does poorly, in other words, if it drops to below the 2016 local government levels, which is around 54%, in other words, if Ramaphosa at the helm cannot secure a better than Zuma did at 54%, then I think Ramaphosa is on shaky ground. And indeed, I do buy into the argument that he will be weakened as a result of an ANC result in the low 50s. At the same time, of course, in my view, even if Ramaphosa manages, 64% vote in a remarkable turnout for the ANC, you know, what does that really mean for the ANC as well? Which side will really claim victory? So I think that the waters are muddied whether Ramaphosa gets a decent victory or whether he gets a relatively narrow victory at the polls. But ultimately, I do believe that what probably will happen, if one eye to gaze into my crystal ball, is that he might do just enough to better the Jacob Zuma numbers from 2016. In other words, get, 56, 57%, perhaps even 58% on a very good day for the ANC, and save his bacon, in a sense, by allowing him to say, "I reversed the tide that was running against the ANC. I've improved their margins, and therefore, I'm the guy at least to lead South Africa." And that will provide him some cushion of security into the next few years.
Gareth, how are you reading it?
Well, I suspect that Daniel's correct when it comes to, the lay of the land and what's likely in terms of an outcome for the ANC. But I'm not sure I entirely subscribe to his analysis of, Ramaphosa as an individual character with his own private mandate that is at odds with the ANC. I think he is born of the ANC. He is subservient to the will of the ANC, and that's how he sees himself. Also, you need to understand this whole thing about an individual mandate for Ramaphosa is essentially an external analysis that's carried in the media and so on and so forth. When the final numbers appear on the board at the IEC, there's just a percentage for the ANC. And people don't see, a certain amount of this went to Ramaphosa as a president, and a certain amount went to us as another faction. They just see a collective endorsement, and individuals interpret that as an endorsement of themselves. And I think everyone in the ANC, if the ANC does well, let's say it ends up closer to 60% than 55%, will interpret that as an endorsement of their own role, agenda, and standing in the party. and take strength from that. And Ramaphosa has always been subservient to the will of the party and will continue to be subservient to the will of the party.
It's an interesting way of viewing it, because it's always been seen that, as you say, from the outside, the president as the figurehead of the campaign would take credit for delivering that public mandate, which is an idea that the ANC still takes quite seriously. Well, in theory, at least, that they have been given this public mandate, and therefore it would be difficult to attack him on a factional basis for perhaps not privatizing the Reserve Bank or dragging his heels on EWC or any of the other issues, Eskom, and what he said about restructuring of state-owned enterprises. Tuma, I'd like to now talk to the political economy side of things here. And if you look at it, South Africa's performance on a range of issues, social, economic, governance, has really gone backwards under the Zuma administration. In fact, we had a report in Unomics published by Bloomberg today saying that out of any country not at war, we've seen the biggest decline on all three of those scales. So will that impact voters at the poll? Are they going to look at this and say, well, our standard of living has actually declined? We've got blackouts. We've got issues with our water. Mr. President, don't be shocked at the size of the rats in Alex. This is not a new phenomenon. Do we see that impacting at the polls?
Exactly. It will. And going to the percentages again, I think the ANC is going to go nationally below the 62.15 that they got in 2014. And my speculation is that the Gauteng province will go. The 53.59 was a very marginal win in 2014, and now they are in trouble. Let me talk of the research that I personally do in smaller towns, where people are complaining about the ANC, the infrastructure that is not well maintained, and they are struggling to get from point A to point B, water problems. I was in the Free State about 2 weeks ago, and you listen to the villagers there when the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, was there, that we do not have water here, and he was saying, you'll get water in less than 2 weeks. There's still no water. So the practical side of service delivery is not there. Municipalities are collapsing. You have the sheriff seizing municipal furniture, computers, and so on. And the cars, 16 cars of Malito Apofung are with the sheriff as we speak. So something that was not expected, unprecedented. You wouldn't expect that the government, government furniture and government property and government vehicles will be seized by the sheriff. But it happened. And people are saying, we are tired of this. Heartfall in Afrikaans.
And that is that's a very interesting observation. It speaks to starting to mature, perhaps, and vote on bread and butter issues, and service delivery is certainly one of those. Daniel, to bring you back in here, tend to see a spike in service delivery protests in the build-up to, be it a local government or a national election. This time around doesn't seem to be too different. Do you subscribe to the idea that we're starting to see in the peri-urban or rural towns a voting pattern to go and vote on bread and butter issues?
Well, just let me say, just in relation to the previous point, which is related to this point, that I'm not convinced that the opposition parties, in particular the DA, have really tackled the bread and butter issues sufficiently in this campaign. In other words, the DA, in my view, certainly has been more focused on the sort of big macro issues of corruption and even on Ramaphosa himself. And in the end, it is high cost of living, poor service delivery, the very high cost of fuel. All of these issues really have been subsumed, in a sense, by state capture, and even, I might add, on the sort of more sort of leftist or populist fringes around the issue of land and land expropriation. So I just don't think we've seen the bread and butter issues sufficiently tackled, and possibly as a result, firstly, we've seen an uptick in service delivery protests, as we've seen before national or even local government votes. But of course, you know, in this case, I think we have seen vulnerable communities who certainly, I think, have got very legitimate grievances in terms of being left behind by the government over the last decade or more. But when you're vulnerable, you're also susceptible to political maneuvers. And there's no doubt in my mind that the vulnerability of ordinary communities allows political parties to play havoc with the emotions in various township areas, and this exacerbates the conflict. So there's a genuine aspect to the service delivery protests. There's an idea that, well, communities can leverage their vote before an election, threaten not to come out to the polls. It's the only time that political parties will listen to us. And I think that's fair, given the really poor state in so many townships. But at the same time, there's a certain vulnerability of these communities to being exploited by political parties. And we've seen that play itself out as well.
Gareth, from a polling perspective, therefore, if the the disgruntled rural voter is to go and vote as a protest vote and not just stay at home and not vote at all, but if they were to go and vote for someone else other than the ANC, what are you picking up as the big winner here, the EFF?
Yes, the EFF is certainly the big winner so far as protest votes go. In fact, the lion's share of its support, I think, our latest poll put at sort of the last 2 weeks of February, we had the EFF on around 12.2%. Whether or not they'll be able to maintain that, we've yet to see, but that's still a substantial amount of growth from 2014. And I think the bulk of that growth is on the back of protest votes as opposed to some kind of ideological affiliation with the EFF. I think it best exemplifies the kind of anger and disdain for ANC, for which Julius Malema is the exemplar. And that party is able to attract the alienated and discontented from the ANC to its ranks as a protest vote. The problem with that, of course, is that if the ANC is able to have a good run into the election, if the last 3 weeks it's able to put forward a strong, uncompromised message, and it's not undermined by things like load shedding and revelations at the Zondo Commission, it can win those people back, or a portion of them back. So they're a very fragile market, the sort of discontented, unhappy voter, and are open to a number of different parties, including the DA on the margins. And how the last 3 weeks play out is going to be key to determining who ends up with them in their lager, so to speak.
Makes for a very exciting election, very difficult to call, Tuma.
Indeed. However, let me say, to go back to the question that you asked, Daniel, about the rural voters. During the visits that I had with these people, talking to informal entrepreneurs who are in places that are not zoned for business, and the municipal officials coming to them and saying, you need to close down. Then I would ask them, how does it happen that you are still here? Because you are told to close down. And they said to me, we threatened them with EFF. That is why we are still here. So if they manage to threaten the municipal officials with EFF, who do we think they will vote for? And let's look into the other space that is very interesting that I've been observing in recent times. Universities. Who is winning SRC elections at universities compared to the past? Previously, we used to have SASCO, which is ANC aligned, winning elections, SRC elections. Now we have EFF Student Command winning elections. Even in the KZN province, you have Mangosuthu Two University of Technology being governed by the EFF Student Command, UKZN, DUT. Then you come to Gauteng province, we have UNISA being governed by the EFF Student Command, we have the TUT, and UJ, even in institutions that you wouldn't think that the EFF will be strong, like UCT, you have the SRC being governed by the EFF, and many other institutions.
To interject then, Daniel, considering that, from my perspective and where I'm sitting, it's not hard to see why supporting the reformers inside the ANC is better than weakening the ANC and subjecting it to coalitions that will play into the hands of the EFF. And with the VBS revelations, that's playing into the hands of the individuals who know exactly how to butter their own bread, so to speak. Or am I missing something here?
Well, I'm not quite sure how you support the reformers of the ANC, because if you vote for the ANC, you get a lucky dip. And you're really not quite sure at the end of the day which grouping will be in the ascendancy. So, I think there is a problem, certainly in my view, but the sort of Peter Bruce argument that one should support the reformers, i.e. vote for Ramaphosa, which is the personified reform, but you just get everybody else. And I think given the uncertainty of factionalism within the ANC, it's not a dead cert that you do assist the reformers in this particular process. I just want to go back to the point that was made. I think it was a very good point from both speakers in terms of the EFF growth, and particularly the point that Gareth made. To me, one of the critical issues here is that there is a large body of alienated voters from the ANC who could swing either way in terms of DA, EFF, or even perhaps one of the smaller and newer opposition parties. And again, I think that there really needs to be a sub-battle in the election. It's not just between opposition, it's not just between opposition parties and the ANC, but it really should be between opposition parties as well. And I think the DA themselves have just not adequately taken the fight to the EFF in terms of potentially taking some of that disgruntled vote. So, you know, I think there's a sort of a sub-battle taking place that hasn't really been fleshed out by the DA in terms of their overall campaign strategies. But overall, I do feel that the growth party is likely to be the EFF, certainly in percentage terms. And then the issue is, what is that message? What does that message say to a Ramaphosa victory of, let's say, 57, 58%, if the EFF is the party to grow by nearly 100%? Does that indicate that the ANC now, with so-called reformers at the helm, have to listen to what the populace is saying on the fringe? And ultimately, if the DA doesn't do well and drops to below 22-23% or so that it got in the last election, does this also mean that the sort of so-called liberal opposition is simply out of favor and the ANC doesn't need to take that course of action in future as well? I think these are very important questions that will be answered with just very small, nuanced percentages of voter shifts in the election.
Specifically in Gauteng, Gareth, as your polling has shown, it's very close and very tight in Gauteng. But it brings me back to my point. And Remgro were quoted in the Sunday Times a couple of weeks ago saying that if it's not an outright majority for the ANC, we'll have political instability going forward, and the EFF as a political kingmaker being the worst case election scenario.
Yes, well, it's difficult to know how a coalition scenario would play out, primarily because I don't think each of the big three parties have actually made a strategic decision as to where they stand on that front themselves. In other words, internally they are divided on the issue and there's no real direction on that front. But I mean, I certainly think from my own personal perspective, if you do legitimate the EFF by making them a formal part of the government, the risks are twofold. It's a kind of double-edged sword. On the one hand, you do risk, and I'm presuming that this coalition is with the ANC, sort of reintegrating the EFF and the various radical impulses it represents back into the ANC and contributing to the radicalization of that party. On the other hand, it is another way to nullify the EFF from the EFF, from the ANC's perspective. It has a long history of, you know, reabsorbing breakaway factions into it through these kind of informal and formal arrangements and basically just subsuming them. So one way or the other, you get the sense that those two parties are sort of headed in the same direction. Whether it results in some kind of formal agreement or an informal merging, in 5 to 10 years' time, it's very difficult to see the ANC and the EFF still separate individual parties, I think.
Tuma?
Michael, I think one thing that we are missing here, we have been talking about solid issues and hard issues that we can see and do calculations about, and we are forgetting about what South African politics and African politics are about, and that is showmanship. And when it comes to the DA, they are not good in that. Musi Maimane is not good in showmanship, which is something that Julius Malema is good at, to take a public platform and know what to say, to who to say that, to sing with people, to crack jokes, to go on a tangent and talk about in Afrikaans kaput stuff, you know, and people love that. And he manages to catch people's heart using all these tricks and funny stuff that one wouldn't think that would they would count. And they do.
No, they're rhetorical political tools, and history shows us that the great orators tend to do well at the ballot.
Exactly. Going back to the coalition government, let's look at who benefited more when it comes to coalition. Inasmuch as the EFF is not really part of the government, they voted for the DA. But look into, for example, insourcing of staff at universities, in municipalities. Who is taking credit for that? The EFF. And you ask people who have been insourced in these organizations, who are they affording credit to? Whether being in Johannesburg, the city of Johannesburg, or University of Pretoria, or any other place where insourcing has taken place, they are crediting the EFF. So, and these are things that really count in elections. My prediction is that they will grow from their 6.25% in 2014 to 9+.
And that is a really solid showing from a very new political party in the greater scheme of things.
Yes.
And we likely see the other COPES and UDFs and UDMs certainly falling by the wayside. It brings me to the smaller fragmented parties. And Gareth, If one looks at the establishment of the African Content Movement and the ATM, the terribly named but quite strategically interesting new upstarts that are founded and headed by well-known Zuma allies, Claudie Motsoeneng, Jimmy Mzwanile Manyi, is this not a strategy to weaken the ANC that plays into a particular faction's hand to say, well, let's see if we can weaken the overall mandate so that we can approach the removal of the president from the perspective of not being able to deliver an increased support on May 8?
Yes, look, I'm not sure whether those people are formally tied. You know, in other words, they have a mandate from Zuma himself to have a go at the ANC, but that, I mean, I think if they achieve any success, and there's no real polling evidence they are going to do that, it will be at the ANC's expense. The problem is that the situation is kind of neutralized, because while these other sort of new parties might be taking small chunks out of the ANC, the DA's got the same kind of problem. The EFF, I beg your pardon, the Freedom Front Plus and the ACDP, those kind of smaller parties are also thriving in the wake of the DA's internal chaos, especially in provinces like the Western Cape. And so they too are taking small chunks out of the opposition. And so the two things kind of neutralize each other to a certain extent. The real winner in all of this is the EFF, which has none of those kind of problems, a very distinct brand, no actual competitors in the electoral market. And it's one of the reasons why this environment of uncertainty, because it is so absolutist and fundamental and distinct.
And that's where we're going to have to leave it. We're out of time tonight. Kianete Fetuane is up next in the lounge for our Cape Town listeners. In Gauteng, Ann Williams is in for Carolyn Stain. Thanks for tuning in to the Classic Business Show, brought to you by Altron Technology Partners in your digital transformation journey. For more information, visit altron.com. Altron, there when it matters.